Court is back in session.
Okay, we are back in session, and we are ready for oral argument in the case of CASA versus State. We have Mr. Marchese and Mr. Stanton as counsel. I note that there was no reply brief filed, so there is no reserved time for rebuttal under the court's rules. So you may proceed for the appellant without reserving time for rebuttal.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Jess Marchese appearing on behalf of Mr. CASA on this appeal. As the court is aware, this is the appeal from a jury verdict of guilty but mentally ill for Mr. CASA on two particular counts, the first being first-degree murder, the second being arson. We've raised a few issues here on this appeal. First, going just generally to the sufficiency of the evidence, specifically whether the court was correct in denying our motion to vacate the jury's verdict, and then secondly, whether or not the jury instructions in this particular case were in fact proper. So just a little bit of a factual background here. Mr. CASA was arrested on these charges. There was an issue as to his competency, so we requested that Mr. CASA be taken up to the district court and evaluated for incompetency, and he was, in fact, found to be incompetent. Then the matter came back to the justice court level once it was found that Mr. CASA was competent to stand trial. There's a preliminary hearing held in the matter, bound over to district court. At that time, or shortly thereafter, we filed a notice to seek an insanity defense due to the fact that it was our belief that based on the facts and some medical records that we had, in fact, procured in our investigation during this matter, that Mr. CASA had a significant mental health history. More specifically, he suffered from schizophrenia. We had had an expert, specifically Mr. Dr. Gregory Brown, look at Mr. CASA, in which he had evaluated him based on all the facts, the evidence, the records, and whatnot, and felt that he did, in fact, meet the standard for an insanity defense at trial. The state properly, in order to do their due diligence, asked for an independent evaluation, and that's when Mr. Dr. Zakowski, I believe it's pronounced, did, in fact, the same. He concurred, generally speaking, with Dr. Brown's assessment, and then the matter went to trial. At trial, we set forth a number of issues, but generally speaking, as a strategic evaluation, we did not argue that it was not Mr. CASA or anything like that. This case generally went to the mental state of Mr. CASA at the time. We didn't want to waste the court's time, Mr. Stanton and Ms. Beverly's time, or the jury's time in arguing what we felt were matters that were not, in fact, controversy. So the state called their witnesses, and then we basically just put on our two witnesses, who were Dr. Brown and Dr. Zakowski. We also entered into evidence probably the equivalent of two phone books worth of medical records, which delineated a very extensive background of schizophrenic episodes from Mr. CASA, specifically things ranging from him calling 911 on himself, thinking that people were out to get him. He was found cowering in his own closet. At one time, he was swimming in rocks, was the way it was described in the reports. And then, of course, we have the matter before us. Matter before, Your Honors, was an incident where Mr. CASA was living in a group home. Specifically, the individuals living in the home were all individuals that were deemed to have mental health issues, such as Mr. CASA. And at some point in time, this is where the facts get a little bit disputed, but generally speaking, there was a Mr. CASA started hearing voices. He lit some couch cushions on fire by putting them on a stovetop. Lit it on fire, unfortunately, the decedent at one point, he tried to lock her, hold her in some sort of a bathroom, but she was actually, thank goodness, at that point, able to get out. Unfortunately, she went back into the residence, and that was where she met her demise, as the house was ablaze. And from the testimony, it appeared that the ceiling or roof of the residence fell on her, unfortunately, and it resulted in her death. Mr. Casa was in the residence. He was yelling. The state made some arguments about suicidal ideation. Regardless, he did make it out at some point with the assistance of the Clark County Fire Department. He was running around. He was hysterical. At one point, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police officers attempted to place him into cuffs, into restraints. When that happened, he resisted, yelling something about killing himself. Once again, somewhat, I believe they said he was foaming at the mouth, something along those lines. And he was taken into custody. So that's generally the facts. We've obviously both done a statement of facts in this case, and it's a situation where I think Mr. Stanton and I generally, for the most part, although we don't agree in the overall result of the case, I think the facts are not necessarily in doubt here. This is not a whodunit. So at trial, it's our argument that we met our burden, number one, for the insanity defense. We believe that based upon, number one, the two doctors' testimonies, both evaluating him, both looking at the extensive medical history of this individual, that based upon that, we met our burden of, I believe it's a preponderance of the evidence. But that's not all that we have to meet here, obviously. We need to also either do one of two things, and we believe that we met both. The first is that he knew or understood the nature and capacity of his act, or the other prong is that he appreciated that his conduct was wrong, meaning not authorized by law, and that's what we feel we've done. And we basically would stand on the evidence and the testimony of the two doctors that reviewed the extensive records in this case in order to show that. Of note is the fact that the state chose not to in their case, which is obviously their right to argue their case as they see fit and prosecute as they see fit. They didn't call any expert testimony in order to rebut that particular evidence. They mainly relied on cross-examination of Mr. Stanton. I hate to admit it, but he did a very effective job of it. He did a very good job with the facts that he had at his disposal, and we took the case to trial because we didn't feel that he had the facts, but the jury felt otherwise. But we feel that that was in error, that particular motion was not, in fact, granted because the lack of evidence discrediting our doctor's opinions in this case. So that leads me to a couple of other issues. The state's defense or argument against our insanity defense was basically two prongs. There was some alleged spice usage of synthetic cannabis by, in fact, Mr. Casa. And then there was also the argument, so they argued voluntary intoxication. We'll get to that shortly hereafter in reference to the faulty jury instructions, or at least that's our opinion. And then the fact that he wanted to die, some sort of an argument there that he had a knowledgeable want and need to kill himself based upon him yelling and talking about suicide or whatnot with the firefighters and the police officers. So we would argue that we still met our burden based upon that. In reference to the suicide, I mean, the state argues that this event, or whatever you want to call it, this incident, was not typical of his normal delusions as outlined in his prior medical hospitalization. But generally speaking, the important thing is here, instead of looking at the micro, let's look at the macro, and that is that both of the doctors looked at his entire extensive history and knew about this, knew of the facts, given all the reports that we, Mr. Stanton, Mr. Beverly, and I had at our disposal, and they still found that even with this talk of suicidal ideations, et cetera, whatever the fact may be, they still found that Mr. Casa did, in fact, meet the requirements under Nevada law. Now, I'd like to now pivot to the jury instructions, because I want to make sure I get all my argument out here and I don't run out of time. So in reference to the jury instructions, the state also looked at there was a small reference by one of the evaluators in the records in reference to some possible spice usage, which was, we noted in our brief, that Mr. Casa did in fact deny at a later date that there was no spice usage. I think it's also important to note that's from the record that Mr. Casa had the assistance of an Ethiopian interpreter here. But I think this is a situation where maybe there also, you could certainly argue that might have been some sort of a gap, so to speak, in the language barrier. But regardless, I'll take it back to my experts, because this was something that was specifically brought out by the prosecution on cross-examination very effectively and extensively, was that even with that particular fact, this alleged spice usage or not, and mind you, we didn't hear from the state, they didn't call any drug experts or anything like that, but even with that particular fact, it didn't change the doctor's evaluations or ultimate conclusions in the case. Like I said, going back to the macro, not the micro of it. So that's an important fact. Now, in reference
to the jury...
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Marquise, hi, Justice Kadish. I know it's kind of hard to figure this out on the screens.
I see it,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So here's my question. The fact that you called two experts and the state didn't call an expert certainly doesn't mean the jury was required to accept the conclusions of the experts, right?
I agree. They can take it or leave it, for sure.
Okay. And it's difficult to establish an NGRI defense. We can all agree that your client had some mental illness. I think the state acknowledged as much by asking for a guilty but mentally ill. But you're required to meet a significantly greater burden than just showing mental illness to warrant NGRI, and the jury here rejected it. So why would we overturn the jury's evaluation of that evidence?
Well, I don't disagree with anything that you just said there, Your Honor. But what I would say is, I would sit here and say that the evidence as it was offered to Your Honor, or to the jury, excuse me, and right now to Your Honor, I guess, I would say that the evidence that we proffered was more than enough to meet our burden of preponderance of the evidence. I mean, these cases are few and far between. I know that you actually had one as a district court judge, and Mr. Stanton has a wealth of knowledge, and I want to say even he doesn't have experience at the time with one of these cases. So there isn't a lot of case law out there to look at. But with that being said, I still feel that we met our burden based upon the stacks of medical records showing that he was schizophrenic, that he was living in a group home, that we had two experts. All those particular facts would buttress our defense, and I feel that we met our burden and then some.
And what's wrong with the... Sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. We might have been going the same place. What's wrong with the instruction number 20 that you're challenging? Why is it incorrect? Why shouldn't it have been given?
Okay, well, two things. Number one, the state can't have it both ways. They're arguing, because it's very important to note, arson is a specific intent crime. We argued about that initially in jury instructions, and the court got it right. They argued it was a general intent crime. When you have a voluntary intoxication, that would vitiate the specific intent portion of the arson. So to me, if they argue that and they meet that burden, that's a real problem, because now they've actually argued my defense for me in that that vitiates the mental state for arson, and then they're having real problems with the felony murder rule. But to get specifically to what Your Honor just asked, I am a firm believer that we should always just keep standard jury instructions as they are. As Mr. Durham, he was arguing this particular instruction, and he even put it in there, and we put it in our brief. It's just simply muddying the waters. I mean, I will concede that this was a case I took a little bit more time on legally, because it's such a, you know, it's a legal defense. It's not, oh, well, they didn't see the guy rob the bank or not. This is something where you really got to get down in the weeds and look at the law. And if the state is conceding that it's a difficult case, I will flat out concede that this was something I had to take more time on it. And to use Mr. Durham's words, we're just simply muddying the waters for the jury and making it more difficult for them to digest these very complicated legal issues for them.
But what I want to follow up on is what specifically is wrong with Instruction 20 that is not adequately clarified by 17 and 14?
The additional language which states that this is so even when the intoxication is so extreme as to make the person unconscious of what he is doing or create a temporary insanity. I think the issue there is that we're combining almost a defense instruction as well as a prosecution instruction, because they were the ones raising the voluntary intoxication to the court to try to rebut or vitiate our insanity defense. And the issue
right,
there is...
But it was helpful to you because it went to the absence of specific intent for arson and then disqualifying arson for felony murder, right?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part, Your Honor. I apologize. It was what for me?
The arson specific intent crime and...
Correct.
Intoxication can defeat the specific intent required for that, and then take arson off the table for felony murder. You too had a reason to be relying on intoxication, did you not?
Well, we didn't, because we didn't feel that the facts met that. We did not concede that Mr. Casa was under the influence of spice or any illicit substance. So that was not where we were going with it. That was something that the prosecution had, they obviously were very prepared. They went through the voluminous records, and really at trial, that was the first time that we had heard anything about that. To say that Mr. Stanton and Ms. Beverly were sandbagging us, they were just doing good lawyering and arguing the facts as they were appropriate to the case. But with that, we objected to that particular jury instruction because we felt that that extra language over and above the standard instruction was extraneous and confusing and misleading.
And you don't feel that it was adequately clarified by Instruction 17?
I don't have Instruction 17 in front of me, Your Honor.
That was disease or defect of the mind does not include a disease or defect caused solely by voluntary intoxication.
Yes, I feel that they're two completely separate issues, and we're muddying the waters by adding that specific language. And the case in which the state got that language from was not a not guilty by reason of insanity case. It wasn't an arson case.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Yes, it's inelegantly worded, no question. I'll grant you that. Thank you. Does anyone in Crescent City have any more questions? The bench is kind of hard to see from here. Very well. Thank you. And we'll call on Mr. Stanton to argue for the state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Justice Pickering. Let me begin by kind of addressing the state's overall perspective of the verdict in this case. The verdict in this case was a jury who was collectively very well attuned to two things. One, what the law was, as evidenced by correct jury instructions about not only not guilty by reason of insanity, but also the layered aspect of intoxication in an voluntary perspective, as the evidence was in this trial, via the correct statements of law in all the operative jury instructions, the ones contested individually on this appeal directly, but collectively as a body of instructions given to the 12. And I think it's important for the court to recognize the details that occurred in this case. And let me just take just a moment to talk about kind of the basic structure of the evidence for not guilty by reason of insanity, and as Mr. Marchese correctly pointed out, that came through Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski. Ironically, in this case, Dr. Zukowski was a doctor originally retained by the state, whose opinion was, as with Dr. Brown, at the time of the operative effects events, Mr. Casa was legally insane at the time. Dr. Brown was never provided in his report that was read and examined, especially on the cross-examination of Dr. Brown, and I'll throw in the examination of Dr. Zukowski, because I think that's where the trial, to a significant degree, pivoted. And in Dr. Brown's context, once again, retained by the defense, provided a lot of material. He authored a report, as he's required under law. Mr. Marchese disgorged that to the state, and on cross-examination, you can see on the record of appeal, around page 604, kind of the limitation of Dr. Brown's opinion as the weight that the jury could lend to it, at least viewed by the defense. Number one, he was never provided with the UMC records. Number two, he concluded that spice, the ingestion of, could be the results of the behavior observed by lay witnesses in this case immediately during and after the murder. Both that was observed and testified to by witnesses in this trial. So once again, spice was not excluded by Dr. Brown, once again affirmed that it could be the genesis and the etiology of his behavior. Now, the basis of the UMC records, where that evidence came from, was from Mr. Casa himself, that this state, every state in this country and the federal system, all have embraced the type of evidence that gave rise to this before the jury is inherently reliable. Statements made for the purpose of diagnosis and treatment in a medical context are inherently reliable. And not only in this case was it the use of spice, but Mr. Casa's more nuanced, detailed description of that to treating medical personnel after he was treated for thermal injuries as a result of his conduct and murder of Ms. Lolita in this case.
Mr. Stanton, and I read Dr. Brown's testimony last night, didn't he also admit, though, Dr. Brown, that even if he ingested spice, it wouldn't change his opinion that even with the spice, he was still legally insane at the time?
Both Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski both concluded that the ingestion of spice did not change their opinion. So the answer to your question is yes, but also by Dr. Zukowski. So the more operative then fact given is that this is stated by Mr. Casa to the treating physician and medical personnel. And he also indicates that it has been his recent behavior of ingesting spice, all of which is important because of his prior history of schizophrenia, which I'm not sure if it's an absolute record of all his adult life issues with schizophrenia by the documentation that was evidence in this trial that Mr. Marchese indicated to this court was voluminous in nature. But it was important because both doctors conceded on cross-examination that at no time in all of his previous interactions with mental health officials did he ever behave anywhere near what was occurring in this particular incident. So once again, it was from the state's perspective and the prerogative of the jury to attribute what occurred on this case as attributable to the recent ingestion of spice, not only recently in his life, but also that day. And it's important to note that his schizophrenia was outlined by Dr. Zukowski is that it was not significant in nature. That's depicted in several pages, but ultimately outlined in detail through his cross-examination on the Record of Appeal at 702. So in Zukowski's perspective, he was given the UMC records prior to his opining his report, and obviously prior to his testimony in this case. They both conclude that they could not rule out Spice. So, Justice Silver, when you say he said that he wouldn't change his opinion, I agree that both may not have changed their opinion, but they both concluded that they could not rule it out. And they both
I thought I read that. He clarified that it was the hospital that wrote, it's not a conclusive diagnosis. The hospital just was ruling out. But what Dr. Brown stated is that was not a conclusive diagnosis. What he was saying on the stand, he clarified, was a conclusive diagnosis.
I would disagree with you, Justice Silver. Dr. Zukowski opines that the conclusion of medical personnel at UMC was a differential diagnosis. Part of that differential diagnosis was for them to rule out Spice usage as a basis for Mr. Casa's behavior. Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski both conclude that they couldn't absolutely rule Spice usage out as an explanation for the behavior in this case. And even more important is the weight to be attributed to how this came about. Once again, the doctors are operating, and the basis in part, if not in whole, of their conclusion that Mr. Casa is insane at the time was based upon statements Mr. Casa made to him or to each doctor while awaiting for trial for murder in this case, some 2 years. The doctors conceded that prior to this, in the review of the UMC records, there is no comment by Mr. Casa whatsoever about any of his delusional statements that he makes to Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski. Now, what's important about that? Well, obviously, you can compare and contrast potentially the integrity of the statements that form an opinion when someone's awaiting charges on murder versus when they're being immediately treated for thermal injuries after they set fire to one's home, as whether or not one is concocting a story to fit their current circumstances. And that may be one set of circumstances in this case that would be compelling, but we had much more than that. In fact, if you look at the record on appeal at pages 612 through 613, both doctors had to concede that in June of 2013, Mr. Casa was involved in an automobile accident where he was treated for injuries. During that treatment, much like what you're seeing here in the murder and the thermal injuries, he tells treating medical personnel that he was drunk and he crashed his car. Now, when he's talking to Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski, that event has now morphed into, my body was forced to do something. That is what caused me to wreck the car. And once again, here, he's now creating a story that he's wants to fully kill himself, the behavior of which, both during the fire observed by a passerby who is out running, jogging, that was called to testify as a witness, as well as another mental health participant in this housing group who was called to testify, his behavior was viewed both during and after the setting of the fatal fire that was inconsistent with the statements that he made to Dr. Brown and Dr. Zukowski.
Mr. Stanton, I don't want to interrupt you too much, but I think we need to discuss instruction number 20 as well, and in particular, the second sentence that your opposing colleague addressed, and whether it introduced reversible error into this case.
Well, Judge, I believe that both individually and collectively, the jury instructions are correct statements of law.
What do you do with the phrase, the reference to this is so, the first sentence is, no act committed by a person while in a state of voluntary intoxication shall be deemed less criminal by reason of his condition. And then it continues, this is so even when the intoxication is so extreme as to, and then some dots, create a temporary insanity. Obviously, insanity can be temporary and still be a not guilty by reason of insanity. And so the wording of that instruction is problematic. I think he makes a fair point, and I'd like to hear your answer to that.
Because I think the instruction in its plain language speaks to the etiology of where that insanity comes from. In the state's instruction and the instruction given in this case, the etiology comes from the ingestion of some sort of intoxicant as opposed to a delusion independent of any ingestion of intoxicants. So I think this statement in the context of the rest of the instruction makes the intoxication quite clear that temporary insanity is only that insanity that deals with a voluntary intoxication that the law does not permit, and that it was specifically stated in the instructions collectively and in that instruction as well as argued even by the state, that recognizing that insanity can exist in conjunction or parallel with the use of intoxicants, it just can't be the basis of the delusional thought.
What does instruction 20 add on that to instruction 17, if anything?
Can you tell me, Judge, what instruction 20 is? I don't have that numbered as such.
Yeah, instruction 20 is the one that I just read to you that says no act committed by a person in a state of voluntary intoxication shall be deemed less criminal by reason of his condition. And then it adds, this is so even where the intoxication is so extreme as to create temporary insanity. Instruction 17 is quite simple. It's just one sentence that ties. It says disease or defect of the mind does not include a disease or defect which is caused solely by voluntary intoxication. I think everyone agrees 17 is correct. But why does
it
mean
20? Well, I think because it reiterates the same principle of law that the etiology of the mental condition cannot be a byproduct of the ingestion of intoxicants, even extreme ingestion of intoxicants.
Okay, so you do not find any error in the wording of 20, the second sentence, and its reference to temporary insanity?
No, I think it's by prior decisions of the Nevada Supreme Court, it is a correct statement of law.
Would you agree that it is somewhat inconsistent with the concept that not guilty of by reason of insanity can be established based on a temporary episode of insanity?
I don't think, number one, I think that as you just posed it, obviously is a correct statement of law, but I don't think it's inconsistent because in the context of the rest of the instruction, it clearly contextualizes the aspect of what that those words and their meaning meant in this particular case. And that is, it was directly tied to the use of intoxicants and that the jury must find the insanity was derived independent of the use of intoxicants.
Do you think this court should clarify or retreat from the reference to temporary insanity in Fisco?
I think there in some cases, Justice Pickering, the answer would be yes. But in this particular case and in several others, the language I think is entirely appropriate and a correct statement of law, especially in conjunction with the instruction as a whole and with other instructions given to the jury about how to treat it and also how it was argued by the parties in front of the jury. And in this particular case, everybody stayed within the parameters about how they argued this case.
Okay. Thank you. I can't see the bench in Carson City. Is there anyone who has a further question among my colleagues in the North? Very well. This matter will stand submitted. I want to thank counsel for participating in the second virtual argument and for your briefing, which was excellent and much appreciated. We'll be in recess. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.